You are tuned to the Nighttime Podcast, focused on the fringe of Canada.
There are few topics more divisive than that of the UFO phenomenon. Even the term UFO itself, as simple as it sounds, can be used in widely different contexts. Some folks may use it to refer to alien aircrafts that clumsily crash on our planet. Others may simply use it to describe an anomalous, unidentified flying object seen in the sky above us. When someone witnesses something in the sky they can't explain, it often doesn't go much further than simply that, witnessing it. The majority of UFO sightings remain unreported, and it's easy to understand why. By claiming to have seen a UFO, you're choosing to take part in a battle being fought all over the world between the believers and the skeptics, a fight that has been going on since long before the birth of anyone listening to this show. When tonight's guest was setting up his tent on PEI's Twin Shores campground in June of 2014, he never would have imagined he'd be avoiding a mass murder in his hometown of Moncton, and at the same time stepping into an entirely different war zone, one he hardly even knew existed. Tonight's story will feature John Shepherd and the 2014 Kensington PEI UFO sighting. I first became aware of this story when a listener sent me an email which included a link to a CBC News report. The CBC article, published on January 12th of 2016, described a UFO sighting that occurred a year and a half prior in the Kensington PEI Twin Shores campground. What made this sighting so fascinating was that the witness, Moncton resident John Shepherd, captured roughly 22 minutes of the affair on his cell phone and subsequently uploaded it to YouTube and reported it to MUFON. For anyone out there unfamiliar, MUFON, or the Mutual UFO Network, is one of the largest and oldest civilian-based UFO investigation organizations. The video itself that John captured that night is mainly composed of a very dark night sky with an unusual light hovering within the frame. At times, there appears to be two separate lights, and for the duration of the recording, John is narrating by explaining to the viewer what he is seeing. Upon a thorough review of John's testimony, the video evidence he provided, and a broader review of what was going on in the sky that night, investigators with MUFON were unable to find any logical explanation for what was seen in the sky, and thus closed their investigation, labeling it a confirmed UFO sighting, a conclusion that they say is very rare. Beyond simply confirming the sighting to be credible, MUFON included the sighting among their top 10 of 2014 and consider it one of the best in Atlantic Canada's history. Now, as I mentioned prior, I first became aware of this story when CBC published an article outlining MUFON's investigation and the rather unusual findings, but CBC's coverage of the story didn't stop with that initial article. Upon publishing the initial story, a swarm of calls and messages sent to CBC seemingly left them uncertain on which way to turn next. CBC opted to publish a follow-up story the next day, but from a very different stance. The follow-up story's headline was PEI UFO Sighting Disputed. However, when one looks at the URL for the article, it's cbc.ca/PEI/UFO Sighting Debunked. Hinting at some uncertainty among the staff at CBC of whether the sighting was disputed or debunked and which position they should take. The follow-up article floated three separate explanations for what was recorded by John Shepherd that night. The first party to present their theory was the highly respected president of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada, Paul Gray, who has successfully debunked many possible UFO sightings using knowledge he obtained during his nearly 30 years of astronomical study. In the article, Mr. Gray proposed that John Shepherd was likely recording the 1142 Air Canada flight that was approaching Île-de-Madeleine Airport. His basis for this theory was that the airport's runway faced the shore where John was standing, leading the airplane to appear to be hanging still within the air rather than moving across the sky as it landed. The next explanation floated in the article came from former PEI National Parks employee Hugh McCormick. Mr. McCormick believed the lights in the sky were likely a parachute flare dropped from a Canadian military plane. His basis for this theory was that in the video John Shepard filmed, you can hear John mention that he heard a helicopter earlier in the evening. John also mentioned in his comments with CBC that he saw what appeared to be a large military aircraft in the area the next morning. Now, the last theory was presented by Kensington resident Ross Thompson, who described a recent anomaly he saw in the sky that he initially considered to be a UFO. But upon investigation, it turned out in fact to be a drone. He believes John Shepard was also watching and filming a drone. Aside from presenting these three alternate theories, CBC did reach out to MUFON Canada's director, Stu Bundy, and he was quoted in the story. In the article, he stated that MUFON considered the three explanations presented and still stand by their initial conclusion, maintaining to this day it is a confirmed UFO sighting, according to MUFON. Now, with the two CBC articles, the results of the MUFON investigation, and John's video, which had been posted and shared around the internet, were caught up with where the traditional media left off in this story. It's at this point that I'd like to dig a little bit deeper into it. I will say, however, that there's likely no amount of digging into this event that will get us all on the same side regarding what we believe happened that night at the Twin Shores campground. There's no way around it. It's highly debatable, and individual opinions are expected to vary, just like they always do when it comes to the UFO phenomenon. So let's get into it. My first step towards understanding the events of that night was to hear straight from the eyewitness, John Shepard. I was in touch with John, and he graciously agreed to discuss the events with me. After the talk with John, I reviewed the case in its entirety with the UFO researcher of whose opinion and expertise I consider to be of the highest quality, Don Ledger. Tonight's episode will include both my discussion with the witness, John Shepard, and the researcher, Don Ledger. We'll begin now with my conversation with Moncton, New Brunswick resident and the 2014 Kensington PEI UFO sighting witness, Mr. John Shepard.
It was June 2014, early June on the 3rd. We were out at Twin Shores Campground, my wife and I and my three dogs. We go to this campground same time every year and have been for about the last 15 years, and we'll continue to go. It was pretty uneventful. We just arrived that night and set up camp and lit a fire, had dinner, sat around the campfire, all that stuff. It wasn't too cold of a night, but one thing with camping and just, you know, getting up there from Moncton and whatnot, it's quite an adventurous day. So my wife turned in, and as usual, I stay up. I usually stay up until the fire goes out, you know, put all the candles and stuff out and then go to bed myself. It was about 11:30 at night, and kind of out of the corner of my eye, I noticed this light way out on the water. Hey, it's kind of odd to see a light out on the water because at nighttime, and I speak from, you know, going there at the same time every year for 15 years, and, you know, being out there for 10 days staring at the ocean day and night, it was a little odd to see a light out there because it's something you just don't see at nighttime. You see boats during the day, lots of fishing boats from 4 o'clock in the morning on, but at 11:30 at night to see, you know, a boat way out there would be really, really strange. And so I watched it for a little while and kind of realized that that might not be a boat, but very far away and it was an extremely bright light. That's what kind of made it odd because the light was so bright. So after I was, you know, watched it for a little while and noticed it was kind of moving somewhat erratically, not very much at first. So I decided to get my camera and film this. As I was filming it, I kind of jokingly said, you know, I think it's a UFO, and kind of giggled and continued to film. Then I started to realize that what I was filming was pretty not normal, if you will. It's not something you see every day or you can, it's not like I could compare it to something that other people could identify with. Like, you know, it was a plane or it was a boat, you know, it was something that people can identify with. It was really, I couldn't really put it to anything. And so I continued to film and talk about what I was seeing, and an extremely bright light, kind of almost pancake in the middle or diamond shape, if you will. Then a second one joined in, and that's when things really got interesting. And at the same time as I'm filming this, I'm holding my camera as still as I can, and I believe I comment saying, I hope somebody can clear up this image, because normally in Prince Edward Island at nighttime, it's beautiful out there, lots of stars, you know, if the moon is full, you have light all night long. And this night was just pitch black. You couldn't see the fingers in front of your face. So as I continued the film, I shined a flashlight to see if that would make a difference, and it really didn't. Then it dawned on me that I didn't really want to give myself away or draw any attention to myself, because I wasn't sure what I was seeing. And so I kind of, you know, stood close to some bushes that were close by and just didn't move, just continued to film. And then oddly enough, on my phone, my local news station sent a message out that Moncton, my town, was under lockdown and that four RCMP officers had been shot and killed. So as I'm videotaping that, I have that flashing on the screen, and I have so many things running through my mind because I have friends here and, you know, friends that I consider family almost. I was just given a little snippet that something is wrong back home. All this is going on and I'm filming. And in between filming, I shot three videos, one about 8 minutes long, the other a couple minutes long each. So this went on for about 25, maybe 30 minutes. I didn't really realize or didn't really sink in what I was filming. All I know is I had these lights moving quite erratically and quite baffling what it was.
Did the light have any color, or was it hard to see in the video? Was it just a white light?
It appeared kind of more white than anything. A little, maybe just like a tinge of yellow underneath, but it was more white than anything, I would say. Possibly even some red too, but it was quite a distance away. I'd say at least a good kilometer. And if you can see, you know, a kilometer ahead of you, whatever's in front of you, be it big, you know, or really big, it's still very hard to see exactly what it is, you know, what you could be looking at. A kilometer is quite a distance, you know, from years of staring out over that ocean. I could tell that it wasn't at water level. It was above the water. And being such a bright light, I would see the water around it, and I just couldn't. But I would say, you know, it lit up close to the size of maybe half a football field or better underneath it, but still couldn't see the water. So that's what made me realize that this is not in the water, it's above the water.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so then I went and woke up my wife and said, I have two things to tell you, one I have very little information about. First off, you know, I told her about Moncton, and I told her about, I think I filmed, you know, a UFO. She had more questions about Moncton than the UFO. So,
oh, wow.
With all that took place in Moncton, I wanted to share the video with friends. You know, I post my pictures of when I'm camping and stuff. But what went on here in Moncton, I waited a few days for that to calm down and, you know, take place. And, you know, we touched base with our friends, make sure everything's okay. And then I shared that video. I maybe got like 5 comments and 6 or 7 likes, and that was the end of that. And then while we were camping, I told my wife, when we get back, I'm going to send it off to somebody. And the only people I could think of was MUFON, because this is what they specialize in and deal with. And, you know, people see strange lights, they report it to them. And I was hoping, hey, if I send them this video, maybe they can clear it up and say, John, it's just a boat or, you know, whatever. And I can live with whatever they come up with. So when I got back, I sent that in, and I had a field agent contact me. He lived in Prince Edward Island, and I shared my story with him, and quickly went over the videos with him and told him all I could. And I later found out 2 years later that he actually went out to the campground that I was at and spent 2 days out there confirming, you know, location, this and that, and I guess gathering information on the things that I shared with him. Then I also found out that my video was considered to be the best of 2014 in sightings. And, you know, they deemed that it wasn't this and it wasn't that. And, you know, it wasn't a helicopter, or it wasn't a Chinese lantern, or a small little remote control aerial plane of any kind. And they ruled all these things out. And this was all kind of news to me. I just found all this out very recently, just before I did a report with CBC.
I was going to ask, where so much time has passed from when you filmed what you had filmed, again, June 2014. I saw this just in the news and CBC within the last month. How can you explain the amount of time? Was this MUFON doing their investigation that took up all that time?
To my knowledge, they did their investigation, and they probably wrapped it up relatively quickly. I don't think it took them 2 years. I think everything was kind of dealt with and agreed upon in 2014. What they did was they reposted a video, I believe, on their site or something like that, and CBC got wind of it and then contacted them, and then they in turn contacted me and asked if I'd be interested in doing that. And considering I live in Moncton, life's pretty boring here. I don't know if you've ever been here, but it can get pretty boring and uneventful, and I thought, hey, I could use a little shake-up in my life. And so I agreed to share, you know, my story, and I told them I can only speak to the video. It's, you know, I haven't drawn any conclusions. I just sent it off in the hopes somebody can sort it out and let us know what it is.
How did you send this off? Was this just something you did through MUFON's website, or how did that happen?
I just I went on their website and I submitted the videos and a short story behind it all, and then they contacted me and they shared with me that they'd put it on their website and all this stuff. I was all fine with it.
Aside from submitting the video and giving them, you know, the Coles Notes version of what happened, were they in touch with you much beyond that?
Not at all, except that CBC wanted to do an interview with me.
Wow. So you submitted all this online, and then about a year and a half later, you hear from them now saying, you know, CBC's looking for you.
Yes, that's correct.
I've read the original article you did with CBC where you described what had happened, and, you know, they gave a summary of the whole occurrence. And then I think a day or maybe two or three days later, they ran the follow-up story where they have the various different people giving their disputing MUFON's findings. Did you know that this follow-up story was coming out?
Yeah, I saw the follow-up to that where other people chimed in on what it could be and that they're saying I'm crazy or MUFON's crazy. I think we have to just accept the fact that this happened 2 years ago. Probably not going to find out what it is. Probably not. And some people just have to get over that fact that we might never know. But everybody has an opinion, and I think that's great. Everybody thinks they know what it is. Well, I say prove it. If you know exactly what it is, you know, if you say it's a Chinese lander, then you need to prove that. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, and I will believe you, but I know that that's not possible, and at this point, nobody's going to figure it out. But it's certainly interesting. It is what it is, and people can say it's a light on a black cloth and all that stuff, and whatever. At the end of the day, I'm not going to lose any sleep over what their opinion is or what their thoughts are. Everybody's entitled to their opinion and their thoughts, and I think it's great that some people chimed in. Some people gave some pretty interesting theories. So some of the information that was laid out in some of these theories, I just don't know enough to even speak upon or debate or argue. I just don't have that kind of knowledge, especially when it comes to aerial things and nautical matters, if you will. So, but I think it's great that all these people are coming up with all these possibilities, and I hope MUFON is paying attention because maybe one of them might have a little bit of validity. I don't know how important it is to MUFON, but it might be worth following up and or investigating.
And one thing I couldn't tell from the video, maybe I missed it, but what ended up happening with the light? I believe in the video I saw, it ended with it appearing as if it went into the water, or it just, you know, you as you're talking, when you're watching it, you're talking about it seeming to get lower, and then it just disappeared.
It was as if there was a mountain there, and it kind of went behind the mountain. Like from the pictures I showed you, and I mean, you can even go at a satellite. There's nothing out there. There's no mountain for it to go around. But from my perspective, that's what it looked like, is that it, like, as if there was like a cove there or something, you know, miles out, and it just kind of drifted in behind a mountain out of sight. It just kind of vanished like that.
As far as the weather that night, it was that dark, I'm guessing it must have been overcast. Do you recall the sky that day?
I really don't recall it being overcast. I know when we arrived, it wasn't too bad of a night. Winds were only about 25 kilometers an hour, I was told. You can hear the waves splashing, but you know, those weren't big white caps or anything like that. It was a breezy night. The June bugs were out big time. I know that because they were flying in my face while I was filming, but I wasn't going to baby out. I had to get that film. So, but yeah, I fought bug to get that video, but you know, I did it for the greater good.
Now, a question, something I'm always curious about, being someone who's, you know, interested in UFOs or the paranormal, with your name and face appearing so prominently on this, you know, CBC article that got some national attention, I'm curious if you could describe the reaction your friends and family and coworkers had after seeing you associated with the UFO phenomena.
Interestingly enough, I do work for a lot of people here in Moncton. I've been called a celebrity. Nobody has made fun of me. If anything, I had one individual share a story of a sighting that they had when they were young. I don't think anybody's been super supportive, but no one's been super negative about it either. It kind of, like I tell them, you know, I have nothing better to do, so I thought I'd try and get famous for a day or two. You know, that's kind of how I put it. And you know, it is what it is. I don't claim it to be aliens. I claim it to be a UFO for sure, because we don't know what it is, and it certainly seemed aerial rather than nautical. So it is what it is. It's exciting stuff. And, you know, I think the media is putting a little bit of a spin on it. they're just doing that for ratings, and I understand that part.
I think the whole idea of the different experts weighing in and all having a different opinion, all the while still disputing MUFON's findings, yet none of them agree either. What I read in the CBC article, there was one person who was convinced it was a drone and another who was convinced it was an aircraft and seemed to have some type of way to prove that it was an airplane going in a certain direction. Everybody among that group, their claims are dispute it just as much as MUFON's are. And again, you're in the middle, not making one strong opinion either way. You're just a guy who filmed some unusual thing in the sky.
Exactly, yeah. I'm just as curious as everybody else, don't get me wrong. I'll be honest, after videotaping that and, you know, taking it in the next day, I couldn't help but notice that my eyes were drawn constantly day and night to the same direction that I videotaped and saw the light. Oddly enough, and here's something else that I don't think has gotten mentioned, is the following day, and I actually have a witness for this, I don't want to say a military plane, and I have no way of proving that it was military, but what looked like a military plane did it, a low-level flyby of the beach right in front of us, must have passed by low level at least four times, twice in one direction, twice in the other.
Wow.
Really low level. Like, so low level, you're going, that plane's low, you know? Certainly was interesting, and I commented to my wife afterwards. I said, odd seeing this here after what I filmed last night. So it looked like a military plane. Can't say that it was for sure, but kind of looked like one.
Yeah, just an odd coincidence, if a coincidence.
Yeah, and then I spent the rest of my 9 days there just staring out at the ocean in the same direction that I filmed, and every day and night, stayed up every night, being an eye out, and I didn't see a repeat, but kind of ruined my camping trip that year. I was all consumed with that and what was going on here in Moncton.
Yeah, that was a busy week to be away with being from Moncton. I didn't realize the time had lined up with that. Of course, I know what you're talking about. It's been all over the news in Canada at the time, but I never put that together.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Now, I understand you mentioned earlier you've gone back to this site and you plan to continue. You've been there since you filmed this?
Yes, we were there last year in 2015. We'll be going again this year as well, too. Same campsite that we've always been. I'll be out there prepared with long vision and night vision and some binoculars and flashlights, you name it. I'll certainly keep an eye open, but I'm not going to stay up too late. Let's put it that way.
But you did bring you do bring different equipment there now, you know, ready if something like this happens again.
Yeah, last year I would say I was well prepared, you know, to spot something and guaranteed my wife that if I saw so much as a bug out on the water that I'd wake her up to show her. But oddly enough, when I was filming it, you know, people say, well, how come he didn't wake up his wife? Well, part of the reason is I didn't really realize what I was filming. I was trying to more make sense of it, plus with the information coming in from Moncton. And another thing, too, you know, I don't want to wake her up for a boat. You know what I mean? That'd kind of be silly. And I didn't really realize what was going on and what was all happening till afterwards. I did wake her up afterwards, but it was a little too late for her to see anything.
Yeah, and you can almost hear your tone change in the video. When I watched the video at first, you're pointing it and you're, you know, look at this odd thing and no big deal. And then as the video goes on, I can almost hear your tone change a bit. And then at one point, it seems like you're about to stop filming. And then that's when you saw the second light. And the video then goes on for another 4 or 5 minutes because, you know, it just renewed your interest. And I could hear your tone change. So I can see what you mean with you didn't realize what it was at first until, you know, a couple minutes in.
Yeah, until we were into it, and then I realized, you know, this is a little messed up, and it's like, well, I guess we're leaving, you know. I'm not staying here with all this going on. And that's when I think the reality that this is really strange kicked in, and at which point, yeah, it was really too late to wake up the wife. You know, being a good husband, I'm always protective of my wife and her feelings and all that stuff, so, you know, I don't want to expose her to anything until I have it sorted out. You know, can be the good husband, so to speak.
Looking back now, how do you feel about CBC's coverage of the story?
I thought it was great. I really think it's really long after the fact. I think it would have been more pertinent to do it back when it happened. And now that all this time has passed, I've thought about it. You know, I'm sure there's radar out there. I'm sure they can monitor boats and planes on the water. I'm sure a satellite probably passed over top of it at least once. During that 30 minutes, if I can get cell phone coverage out there, then for sure a satellite passed. So it bothered me that somebody or something had to have seen what I saw. And interestingly enough, this happened after CBC. I got a lot of people contacting me and held off on contacting a few of them One gentleman I did notice from Kensington, he was one of the first to actually send me a message just asking if I was the guy that shot the video, and if so, he'd like to talk to me. He said, yeah, I'm the guy. What's new and exciting? He claimed that he, too, saw the same light that same evening back in June of 2014.
Wow.
Oddly enough, before my story even aired, him and his friend that he saw it with were talking about it. And then I think a week later, my story aired, and he called up his friend, and you know, they just couldn't believe it. So he's an eyewitness to the event, and we confirmed that we were looking at the same thing just based on geography from where he was and where I was and the direction we were facing. We were both looking in the same area. He mentioned a couple things to me that nobody else would know unless you saw it yourself. It solidified in my mind that this guy, I believe, saw what I saw. Having realized that, I didn't want to get into a very long, large discussion with him. I suggested to him that maybe he contact MUFON. They might like to speak to him. But he claims, you know, I don't have a picture or video or anything like that. And I said, I know, but you give credibility to my story.
Mm-hmm.
I said, because right now I'm the only one that saw it. And he's claiming that him and a friend saw it. So there's two eyewitnesses. I don't want to give out his name or his information, but I have his name and information, and I've contacted MUFON in an email stating that I have somebody who claims that they saw what I saw. And I cut my conversation short with him because I don't want to share my story other than what he knows already. And I don't want to hear his story because it might creep its way into the existing story.
Makes sense.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a smart idea to do.
I don't want our stories to get tainted until he gives his version to somebody or to MUFON, and it's out in the open. Then I'm happy to discuss details or whatever else we can talk about. So I didn't want to know much. So that was very exciting. And so I hope MUFON will be interested, and maybe I can arrange it and he can remain anonymous if he likes, but maybe just get him to share his story. And then there's two crazies walking around, not just one.
Having another eyewitness to it just adds credibility to their findings as well, or at least solidifies some of their opinions on it.
For sure, and might give a different perspective to the story. And there's two gentlemen that saw it. There's maybe more people have seen it, and will come out if more people talk about it. Because he said that he told a few people, and they kind of, you know, you're crazy, this kind of thing. And my fear is that he might be a little hesitant to talk, but maybe if I can confer with MUFON that, you know, we keep him anonymous and just kind of let him approach on his own terms and share only, you know, what he wants, then maybe we can get him to share his account. Then things will get interesting.
Yeah, well, I hope that comes together, but I do understand his apprehension with getting involved. A lot of people will see something, and very few are comfortable reporting it. I can tell talking to you, you're a loose, casual guy, but a lot of people will see something like this and not want to go public and not want to have their name or face associated with anything, you know, anything strange like that.
And for sure, and you got to have a little backbone and be able to let things slide off your shoulder. People are going to call you names and say bad things about you, and you know, but I don't lose any sleep over stuff like that. And, you know, I'm thick-skinned and everybody's tough on a computer. So
you mentioned you heard from, you know, reporters and journalists and people like that wanting to get your story. But have you heard from any government agency or, you know, search and rescue or any type of agency like that?
None whatsoever. I mean, outside of MUFON and CBC, I haven't heard from anybody. Even my story is so out there, somebody could just rewrite what's already written and still come out with the same story. But with you, I shared a little new information with you there on somebody else who may have an account of it. Who knows, the saga will continue.
Looking back at it, what do you have any opinion on what you saw that night?
I've never dismissed the fact that that, you know, the possibility of extraterrestrial life exists outside of Earth. We live in such a vast universe. I think it's almost naive to not think that that possibility could exist. Could it have been alien? Possibly. But then again, possibly not. That I don't know. I'm open to the concept and the idea that it does exist, and that what I saw might possibly have been some kind of alien ship. Possible. It could have been military for all I know. But I'm open to all kinds of possibilities. And, you know, even be it an alien possibility, I'm open to that as well, too.
No, it's a fascinating, the whole story's fascinating. The fact that MUFON got involved and you were unaware of this until CBC contacted you, it just seems like the beginning of a movie. And hopefully when this other eyewitness comes forward, you know, we'll get to the main part of the movie where stuff really starts going down.
Well, oddly enough, I already have a movie script all prepared about it. Unfortunately, there's going to be a nasty abduction that takes place. But yeah, I've already come up with a whole movie for it. It's coming up. We've got to work on a title now.
And who's going to play you? Have you decided that yet?
I'd like to play myself, actually. I think that'd be awesome.
Okay, good. Well, I hope that works out. I'll be in lineup to get tickets opening night, if so.
I got to start sending off my script there to directors and stuff.
good luck with it. Well, either way, I'm going to be following the news because hopefully we'll see more of this story. I think a story like this in the local news in Atlantic Canada, for me, this is my bread and butter. I love to see. When I saw there was UFOs in the news again, I was pumped when I clicked the link and opened that up.
I have to admit, I'm pretty lucky to have seen it, and just as lucky to have gotten, you know, the video footage. As poor as it is, I was lucky to get that, you know, have something to talk about. Not something you see every day, so I was lucky to get it. We'll be prepared when I go out this year to get any other good video if I see something happen.
Good. If so, if you do get anything, you contact me first. I'd love to get the lead on that.
For sure. Just have your checkbook ready, though.
After the discussion you just heard, I provided a copy of it, along with both CBC articles and the videos that started this all, to my most trusted UFO advisor, Mr. Don Ledger. Beyond his UFO research, Don serves as the technical affiliate for the National Aviation Reporting Center on Anomalous Phenomenon, also known as NARCAP. He's a pilot with an incredible amount of experience, and he is the celebrated author of several books on the UFO phenomenon, including Maritime UFO Files and the definitive telling of Nova Scotia's Shag Harbor incident, Dark Object. I will now play an excerpt from my talk with Don. In the following piece, he'll give a rather candid opinion on some of the theories that were put forward in the second CBC article.
I couldn't really see it on YouTube when I looked at it. I couldn't see anything but a white dot. And to be honest with you, between you, me, and the gatepost, and about maybe 100 other good ufologists, if you want to call them that, we hate it. But lights in the sky piss the shit right out of us. You know, we hate them. People report them all the time. You can't prove anything. It's a light in the sky. You know, there's so many goddamn reasons for there to be a light in the sky nowadays. But the thing of it is, if it's constant and it's like 25 minutes, it's got some credibility. That's really what it's got going for it right now, is its time and its fixed position. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be a fishing boat, I'll guarantee you that right now, unless it was a fishing boat out there with a bright searchlight on that was pointing right at the campground. I mean, you get that thing a few degrees one way or the other, you're going to lose it. You know, you're not going to see a constant brilliant light pointing at you. So he's got some weird little thing going on there, and it's out over the ocean, and he's got like about 75 to 80 miles away, that island. You know, that's about the only thing that's out there that's fixed on the water, you know, which is Ulda Madeleine. You've got Paul Gray there. He's a Royal Astronomical Society. You can take a lot of things that are said by astronomers with an ounce of friggin' cod liver oil. It doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot. They're really not very cognizant of what the hell's going on in the first 60 miles. Mm-hmm. That's not where they look. You're looking for pilots and meteorologists. They're the ones that know what's going on in that first 60 miles. Well, you know, pilots up to 40,000 to 50,000 feet. I'm talking airline pilots, but, or even Air Force pilots. But the thing of it is, Paul Gray there, he said that it was probably an aircraft landing. Now, you think to yourself, well, that sounds so stupid. How could that possibly be? And it does sound stupid at first glance, but when you consider it, that's 80 miles away from his position, right? But when you've got an aircraft on a glide slope coming down at a constant rate of descent right towards you with his landing light on, it looks to you, in the fixed position you're in, if you're just at the right distance, it looks to you like it's hanging in one place in the sky. When it's not, it's coming towards you slowly. I experienced it myself long before I became a pilot and saw an object when I was out on Souls Lake, and it was just an aircraft coming in. It was on his glide slope coming in, landing on runway, what was then 2-4, it's now 2-3, at Halifax International. It was on his base leg coming down. This same thing could have been happening with this guy, only he's coming straight in on the runway. The runway at Ulda Madeleine is pointing right at his position, right? I checked it. I looked it up. So somebody on a straight-in approach on the glide slope could look like a light hanging in the sky. At first, I thought it was just the length of time that it was on his cell phone. And that seemed reasonable. But when I listened to this afternoon, it sounds to me like it took place over 25 minutes.
Yeah, he had several videos that spanned about 25 minutes.
Yeah, of the same thing.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, then it wasn't an airplane on the glide slope. Doesn't matter what the weather was or anything like that. You can eliminate that. No airplane was coming down a glide slope for 25 minutes. I mean, Jesus, he would have been at 150,000 feet or something. The other thing was the overcast. How high is that overcast? If the overcast is at 3,000, 6,000, you're not going to see any airplane that's coming on a glide slope way the hell over ill-made to live because of the curve of the horizon, right?
If it was a plane landing, how long would you expect that to take?
I don't know. More reasonably, say, a couple of minutes. Maybe 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay. And the other theories that were floated in the article was that it could have been a flare dropped or it could have been a drone. What do you think of those theories?
They're bullshit. The drone is the new weather balloon, the new Chinese lantern. You know, I mean, those things are around all the time. That's always an explanation, which is stupid. A Chinese lantern lasts about 2 minutes, gets up about 1,000 feet, right? And they're not brilliant. Mm-hmm. I've seen them. You know, if you go down to any of these big car races in the United States, NASCAR or anything, after the races are over at night and we're all sitting around barbecuing and drinking and having a hell of a good time, the next thing you know, there's about 1,000 goddamn Chinese lanterns floating around in the air. Here in Canada, they're outlawing them because they can cause forest fires and roof fires and all kinds of things. What was your other one?
The other one that was floated in the CBC article was a flare dropped from a
You know how long they last?
No.
About 2.5 minutes as well. They're only effective between 1,500 feet, maybe down to about 500 feet. Well, you know, if you can still see it, it's all right. 500 is really effective. They're there to illuminate something on the water, okay? This is if you're searching for something. They don't, they're a parachute flare. They don't last very long. And they could drop it, you know, from 4,000 or 5,000 feet, but it won't ignite as it gets down around 1,500 feet because it won't illuminate anything on the water. They're called LUU1 flares or LUU2s. There's two or three different types, but the main parachute flare, they've been around for years. It cost about, I think there's something like $3,000 or $4,000 a piece, and you just don't go throwing them around lightly. If you see anybody even firing an ordinary flare that you'd have down on a fishing boat or something, you know, when you're in distress, it's only going to go up about as much as maybe 600 or 700 feet, and it's going to drift out. It go out within a matter of 30 seconds. So flares are always a really dumb explanation for anything. It's just not so. Not if he's got this thing for 25 minutes.
The only other thing I wanted to ask you was, to me as a layman, it seemed like there was some similarities between what he saw in the Shag Harbor incident. Do you see any similarity at all?
No, not much. Shag Harbor was up close and personal, really. You know, well, 700 or 800 feet away originally. You know, on the water, and then drifting outwards. Don't forget, by the time the Mounties arrived on the site, the thing was still on the water. It's probably about 1,000 feet out. But by the time the thing either sank or submerged, there was probably about somewhere around 20-22 people.
I ended Don's comments where I did as we entered into a conversation about the Shag Harbor UFO incident. I'm in fact currently researching this sighting with the help of Don in his book Dark Object and plan to cover it in an upcoming episode. So now with both statements, John's and Don's, behind us, and having watched John Shepard's narrated video of his UFO sighting, I'm still personally unable to come up with a reasonable explanation for what he witnessed in the sky that night. I initially thought an airplane was the likely cause, agreeing with Paul Gray from the Royal Astronomical Society. However, after discussing with Don Ledger, I'm no longer favoring this explanation. A flare or a drone from the very beginning didn't seem right to me. So I guess my stance is the same as the MUFON investigator. I believe with the information available at this point, the event's unexplainable. I hope in the future the second witness mentioned by John Shepard will come forward, and perhaps his statement will hold the key to understanding what happened in the sky that night. So with that, I'll end this episode of the Nighttime Podcast. I want to thank both John and Don for sharing their experiences and their thoughts with me. For any of you wishing to dive in deeper, I'll post a link to John's video on the Nighttime Podcast Facebook page and include it in the show's notes for this episode. If you're interested in hearing more content, please check out the Nighttime Patron Group, where for $1 a month, you can support the show's creation and access supporter-exclusive bonus content. You can join now by visiting patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. On behalf of myself and the show's listeners, I'd like to thank the continued support of the show's current patrons and welcome the newest members to the group. Without you all, the production of the show would be impossible. If any of you listening want to stay up to date with my activities on and off the show, you can follow along on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I use the handle @nighttimepod. If you have any story ideas or feedback on the show, I'd love to hear from you at nighttimepodcast@gmail.com. So until next time, keep looking around and let me know if you see anything weird.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte. Copyright Jordan Bonaparte.